Shoftim includes a great deal of material about the Hanhogas of war, the last part, etc., and spilling over into the beginning of next week's Sedra deals with aspects of war. And although a lot of it's very practical, how to ensure the army is inspired, how to ensure they behave in particular ways, and the primary focus ensuring, of course, that they win the war, lying behind the text, as one would expect, one finds quite important ethical issues. And I'm sure that any ethical works written from a Jewish perspective on the Hanhogas of war would draw their material from some of the things I'm going to say, and also from other sources based on the end of our parasha. So one of the most well-known sections, which I'm going to look at from two perspectives, near the end of the section, it's the beginning of Perek Chaf of Devarim. He says, "Sela milchamo ayuvecho," when you go out to war against your enemies, "v'ro'iso sus vorecheb," and you see the horses and the chariots. I think the use of the singular is intended to convey how many of them there are, not just one or two, but it's just an enormous number. That's what the singular is intended to convey. Look at this, susim. Am rav mimcho. Many more people than you. Lo siro mehem, do not be afraid of them. Ki Hashem elekecho imach, because the Lord your God is with you. Ha'amalecho me'aretz Mitzrayim, who brought you up from Egypt. You know, if you can bring me out of Egypt, out of the most locked place in history, you can survive this war as well. And then the famous passage begins, and will be when you draw near to the battle, the Kohen, this is the person known as the Moshuach Milchomo, a Kohen who has some aspect of the status of a Kohen Godless. You're learning Daf Yomi, you'll have come across some of these things recently. The Kohen, specially designated for this purpose, draws near and he speaks words of inspiration to the people. V'omar aleihem, and he shall say to them, Shema Yisrael. And we're going to see that this phrase is very significant. Shema Yisrael, listen, Jews. Atem krevim hayom la milchomo aloyevechem. You are drawing near today to the war against your enemies. Al yirach levavchem, do not let your hearts grow soft. Al tiru v'al tachbazu v'al tarotsu mitnehem. Do not be frightened, do not take fear, various other words indicating that you should not in any way be concerned about facing your enemies. Why? Ki Hashem Elokeichem Oelechim Ochem Leilochim Lochem Imoyveichem Loisheeschem, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is with you, he's going to save you from your enemies. So let's stop there, because the next part we'll look at a little later. The Dibaru Hashoiturim Ela Omle Moy. Now the Shoiturim, the policemen, they begin to speak to the people, and they have a new speech, which is referring to who feels the need to leave the war for various reasons. We will examine that in its Hashem a bit further on. Let's spend some time on this Shema Yisrael. Well-known Chazal, it's Gemara in Sota. Why does the speech of the Moshuach Milchomo begin with the phrase Shema Yisrael? I mean, he's standing there. They're listening to him. He's been employed by Klal Yisrael specifically to address them in times of war, to tell them how to behave. So why do you need to begin his speech, Shema Yisrael? And in fact, the Maharal on the Rashi on the Pasuk says that's the reason why Chazal say what they're going to say, because the phrase Shema Yisrael is redundant. Obviously he's speaking to the Jews, and obviously they've got to listen. Otherwise every speech in the Torah could begin Shema Yisrael, and it doesn't. Says the Gemara, "My Shana Shema Yisrael, why is this phrase chosen rather than any other phrase? Omer Rebbe Yochanan, Mishum Rebbe Shem Ben Yochai, Omer Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu." It's a Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Beis Omer Aleph. Omer Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. God is saying, through his Moshuach Milchoma to the Jewish people, "Afilu lo kiyamtem el kriyash Shema Shachris v'arvis," even if you've only fulfilled your obligations of Shema evening and morning, "Iyatem Nimsorim biyodom," you won't fall into their hands. So this is a very curious statement. I mean, are we really suggesting that even if they have only observed, even after the Lashon of Gemara read literally, afilu lo kiyamten ela kriyas shema shachrit v'arvit, yaten nimsorim biyodom. So I mean, they can be over there, Zora, Mechale, Shabbos, but as long as they say Shema, everything's okay. It really can't mean that. It's not seem a plausible explanation. And many of them, Forshim, try to understand what this means. We understand why the redundancy is explained to be a reference to Shema Yisrael. It's irresistible for Chazal. Shema Yisrael, I mean, it must have something to do with the familiar Shema Yisrael. So Rav Hirsch has a bash as follows. Shema Yisrael, just as it is with these words that every Jew, early and late, daily brings home to his mind his allegiance to the one and only God with all its consequences, so is it also the same thought and the same allegiance to the one and only God before whom in a moment of battle all other greatness and power loses all importance. So what is interesting here, he's interpreting the Gemara, not as all you have to do is say the word Shema Yisrael in the evening and morning, and you can do whatever you like the rest of the time. As long as you say that, you'll win the war. That's absurd. What he's saying is that Shema Yisrael represents a mindset. It represents the concept which elevates the Jews above the non-Jews, and which is going to assure their success in the war against their enemies. As he says, it's the one God, the one and only God before whom in the moment of battle all other greatness and power loses in importance. This appears to be very similar, an adjusted version of what the Maharal says. Let me read you the Maharal, again on the same pasuk. The Tam Hadovah, what's this about? Ki zuchus kriya shema, dai lohem natseach. The merit of Kriyas Shema, that means that if they have properly integrated the notion that Shema Yisrael represents, if they have properly understood and taken it into themselves, then the merit of that concept is sufficient to elevate them above their enemies and to guarantee divine intervention and to win the war. Ki ha'achdus shehein ma'aminim boy, because the unity in which they express their belief, this is not just some a reading, say a few words, some kind of hocus pocus and everything's fine. This is a commitment at the moment of battle. Now I'll pause for a moment. The moment of battle is a very, very difficult psychological moment. Much has been written about the mindset of war, the psychology of war. You can see from the parsha of Eshes Yefas Toya at the beginning of next week's parsha that the Torah itself has to make a concession for the fact that human beings behave quite differently in a war situation, and the different standards of morality are often applied than would apply normally in non-war situations. I mean, the Eshes Yefas Toya is one of the most perplexing things. I'm scheduled to speak at the Chasam Mitzvah Hashem next week, and the Kala said to me, don't speak about Eshes Yefas Toya, right? Not that I was planning to, but one appreciates that it doesn't exemplify the kind of normal behaviour of the Jewish people. And not only that, not only standards of morality may be compromised by the war situation, but even the sense that one believes in the one God. After all, here we have two sides, there are two wars. The beginning of dualism is the concept there are two powers, two forces in this world. The concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being one, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, is a statement that despite all appearances to the contrary, there is only one power. There is only one force. That dualism, the sense that there is one power of good and one power of bad, which is of course Avodah Zorah, and is the origin of so much idolatry, it's one of the great themes of all sorts of Jewish thought, the refutation of dualism. Well, in the moment of war, when you see good and bad in front of you, there's a danger that your understanding of the achdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be compromised. And therefore, at this moment, it's necessary to stimulate them, to make them think, and to inspire the troops and say to them, don't forget Shema Yisrael. That it's your belief in the utterance that this power, this strong army you see in front of you as we began, Sus, Borechev, the innumerable horses and chariots, Lo siro, my hand. Don't be frightened of them. Ki Hashem Elokech imoch hamalach on the Eretz Yisrael. Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is with you, the God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the den of Avodah Zorah, out of the place where dualism rules, the forces of good and bad. We don't have any of that. If you remember that, then everything will be okay. That's how I understand the Maharal. Because if they, I'll go back to Maharal now, ki ha'achdus shehema aminim bo, because the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in which they express their belief, that is what will vanquish the power of the Goyim. Because the Jews cling to the concept of the one God. Because when you say one, it means you're declaring not that only there is one. When you say Efes Zulosoi in Olenu, you mean there is nothing else at all, and all other appearances are false. There is nothing in this world at all apart from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein mibaladoi. U'ma'achashay mibaladoi. And therefore it follows, if there's nothing apart from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nimsa ki hu govar ala koil, he controls everything, va'ad she'ein hakol nechshav etzoi rak koyach echod. There's only one power, everything is in his hands. And he goes on to explain that therefore, if they really state their belief in this, and it's absolutely genuine, then the mask of the power of the enemy is removed, and there's nothing else there, therefore their success is guaranteed. And Rav Kish is really saying something similar, although the Maharal says it in more explicit language. And so these Mephoshim understand that it's not simply saying the word Shema Yisrael. It's appreciating the concept, and this concept is particularly compromised at the moment of war, where you see forces, disparate forces in front of you, which will compromise your belief in the unity and complete control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Before I move on to the second little idea I'd like to share with you, the Shemesh Shmuel, also discussing this question, again he has several pieces asking why Kriyas Shema is so significant in terms of the presentation to the troops by the Mashiach Milchomo. He gives a new idea, and perhaps if we want to understand that in times of challenge, times of difficulty, times of war, we begin to think, well, maybe they do have power, maybe they are right, and so on. All those things are completely alien, but nonetheless are problematic at the time of war. There's another question, another problem that besets the Jew in war. And the Shemesh Shmuel suggests that it could be the Shema Yisrael is persons in this regard as well. It could well be that a person finds that he accepts the old Malchus Shemayim. He says Kriyas Shema, he accepts the ideas over and over again, but nothing seems to happen. The magic words don't seem to produce any results. I still feel the same. My sveikas, my problems don't seem to go away. Af al pi chein. A person shouldn't think, I'm a nobody, I'm a failure. That's not the Jewish way. Despite the repeated activity and no apparent results, we don't give up. The responsibility is to strengthen oneself and to begin again. This is the ability of the Jewish people to always begin again. That's why you know the famous Gemara that we're compared to the moon wanes, it looks like it's about to disappear, and suddenly it's back on form again. But the koyach of Klal Yisrael like this, lahaschil tomed mechodosh, to always be prepared to start again and to renew. V'zeh einu moksu ba'akum, this koyach, the capacity to almost wink out of existence, or to experience failure but not to be disheartened and to start again, is absent from the goyim. Why he heim shame ba'atzmon? Because they are, as it were, self-sufficient spiritually. They don't have any, if you like, higher power on which to draw. And a piece which the Shemesh Shmuel repeats numerous times in his work, he always says that Esav loshen osu means Esav means you're made, finished, done. The job is done. There's no progress, nothing possible in comparison, of course, with Yaakov miloshen ekev shekofen hu be'enei atzmoi mikol tomid mechodosh. He always sees himself as small, there's always further to go, and he begins again. So Shema Yisrael represents this idea that even though it's something which is, that's why he's pointing out, the Gemara says, Shachris for Arabis, it's over and over again, the ability to say, I can fight, no matter what happens, I'm going to be on the scene tomorrow and you're not. And we can think back through history, no matter how our enemies appear to be gathering at the moment, we can think back through our history and we can see all of the great nations, the rise and fall, disappear, that we're still here and they're not. So, two possible explanations of the Shema Yisrael. I want to turn now to the continuation of the Pesukim. In the fifth Pasuk, the Diburoya Shotrim Ela Om Leimor, the Shotrim, the policeman, speaks to the people as follows. And again, this part of the speech is even more well known than the first part. Miho Ish Asher Bono Vayis Chodosh Lo Chanachoy, who is the man who has built a new house and not established it, has not inaugurated it, Yelech Vyosho Vaveisoi, he should go and return to his house, Penny Muslim Yel Chomo, lest he die in the war, the Ish Acher Yach Nechenu, and another man should dedicate it. Who is the man who has planted a vineyard and not enjoyed its fruit? You should go and return to his house, lest he die in the war. The ish acher yichalalenu, and another man will dedicate it and eat its fruits. Who is a man who has betrothed a woman and has not taken her into his house? He should go home, lest he die in the war. The ish acher yikochenu, and another man take her. That's the speech. Then the Yosavu Hashotrim Ledaber El Ha'om, and now another speech. The Hashotrim shall say further to the people, the Omru, and say, in a separate passage, why it doesn't continue is obviously significant. It should just continue. Why isn't it simply a fourth line? Miho Ish Hayorei Barach Halevov. Who is the man who is frightened and soft of heart? Yeilech V'Yoshov Leveisoi. He should go and return to his house. And he should not cause the heart of his brothers to melt, kilvovoi, like his heart. And it will be when the policemen have finished speaking to the people, and you shall appoint the army leaders at the head of the people ready for battle. And we're going to focus on this rather anomalous fourth line for the speech, which is put separately. The Yosefu, it's something which is separate, it's something put separately. It somehow doesn't fit with the others. And as you may know, in Sose, in Mem Dalet Omad Aleph, there is a machlokes tanoim as to the meaning of this phrase. Rabbi Akiva says, Hayorei v'rach halevov, the man who is frightened and soft of heart, kamashma is literal. The guy's frightened. Sheini yochel lamoi b'kishon olchomel yorish cherev shlufo. He is incapable of standing in the heat of the battle and seeing a drawn sword. He can't cope with it. He's going to collapse. He's going to, the consequences, it will lower the morale of the troops. It's a literal reading. But Rebbe Yisya Galili Omer, basically he doesn't buy this. And I think he doesn't buy it, partly because it's presented as a separate line. It's something else. This is the Yosefu Hashotrim Ledaber. Something separate, something different. Yes.
But even the other ones are things in which they've got situations they've finally finished.
Right. It's true, but they're about Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva reads it literally. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Glidi says, well, it can't mean literally. If he says, Yorei Barach Levov, it may also be from the tautologist phraseology. Hayorei Barach Levov. What's the difference between the two? He can be a Yorei or Rach Halevov. What do you need both for? It would seem to imply that there's something else. So, a long analysis of exactly why each says what is that would be a Gemara Shir. But here, if Yosef Levi gives a non-literal reading, I think based on the phraseology and the language. The Zerha Misyorim in Aver Sheviyodai. This is someone who's frightened of the Averis he has in hand. Lefichoch Tolsoloi Hatova Eskol Eli Shachsu Beglola. He can find an excuse to go home, basically. He's frightened, I'm a Balabeiro, and the Torah demands an extremely high spiritual level of the people in order to invoke the divine intervention for our success, because we're not going to win by natural means. We've already discovered that Sus for Rechev Am Rav Nimcho. By natural means you will not win this war. And if that's the case, he realizes that his Averas may result in the failure of the divine intervention. He's going to pull the whole army down. So he wants to go away, but to avoid his embarrassment, so we find that if he hides, well, I'm frightened, I can go home. And as I said, if you want to, just briefly in Rashi said, Lefichoch, Hayor Zeho Yorna Averis Tolah Torah, Bonavanot of Eris Lachso, Biglolan. In fact, he says that all of the others, building the house, and planting the vineyard, and marrying the woman, are all put there to give this fellow, who may be a Balavera, an excuse to go home without being embarrassed. Oh, I'm just one of those, I can go along with them. So, the Torah takes it very seriously. That if the person is not on a high spiritual level, has not succeeded, as it were, in being a member of an army which appears to have exceptionally high spiritual demands, he is allowed to volunteer to go home. By the way, this is talking about Menuchas Rishus. That's quite important. Rashi introduced his comment to say this. In a Menuchas Mitzvah, then everyone has to go. Chosen, Nechopose, and so on and so on. So, what is interesting is the Gemara on the next page gives an example of an Avera which would allow someone to go home from the war. It's absolutely astonishing. You can't imagine that there's anyone who hasn't done an Avera of this sort or at this level. Soch bein tefillah letefillah. If a person were to speak between putting on the shel yad and the shel rosh, Averihi biyodai, this would be considered an Avera in hand, and he can go home from the war simply for having done this. Now, at face value, the Gemara seems to be saying that if a person has done an Avera of this level, now, this is not a good thing to do. But it's very difficult to describe this as one of the most serious Averas. If we want to examine the number of things on this level of severity, it's difficult to imagine anyone would be able to remain in the war. And Rashi confirms that that's the correct reading of the Gemara. Bein hanochas tefillin shel yad letefillin shel rosh. Soch sipper. He spoke between, and if he's done an avera of this sort, even that's considered sufficient. He can go in from the war. So, this helps us in the last few minutes, I think, to understand what Chazal are really getting at with this. What mindset, what is expected? How does one win the battle of hearts and minds, as we call the Shia? What do they expect of a person? It can't expect that the person is completely and utterly free of the slice of Eira. He's never spoken about Lashon Hara, which is more serious than this. I mean, how does it go? Is it possible? Are we asking for an army of total tzaddikim? If they're on this type of level, I don't know why the war's necessary at all. But a bit of luck, they can just sit there and everything will be fine. So, lying behind this, I think we can find an interesting idea. And many of you will be familiar with the tefillah that is said before putting on tefillin. And this gives a little insight on a thing on which Rav Hirsch bases the comment with which we're going to finish. Hini mechavim ba'machas tefillin, I intend through the wearing of tefillin, lekayim mitzvah boimi, to fill the mitzvah of my Creator, shetivon alaniyach tefillin, who has commanded us to don tefillin. And then it quotes the relevant pasukim. Sheyesh bohem yichudoi, they contain the concept of the unity of God, v'achduso yisborach shemoi ba'olam, and the unifying force of God in this world, v'shenitka nisim v'niflois, and that we should remember the miracles, Sha'asa imanu b'hoit tionim mitzvah, when he brought out of Mitzvah, and two of the Parshas Tefillin are the end of Parshas Boy, they are an adjunct to the Exodus. V'asher lo ha'koch v'hamim sholah be'elyonim, here, this is the key bit, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the power in the upper world of the Tachtonim and in the lower world, la'asayf bohem kiratzoi noi, to do whatever he wants. V'tivon l'aniach al'ayod, and he commands us to put them on my arm, l'zichron z'ra natuyo, to recall the outstretched arm, the power of God in Egypt, v'shineged alev, and it's put next to the heart, that's where the arm rests, l'shabed bozeh tabas u'machshavoy sliben l'avod osoy, to thereby subjugate the desires and thoughts of our hearts to his service, yisborach shemoy, v'al arosh neged amoyach, and on the head, facing the brain, so that the soul within my brain, in Sha'ar Hushai V'Choychoisai, together with my other senses and capacities, Kulom Yum Shubodim L'Avodosoi, all are subjugated to his will, Yisborach Shemoi, his name should be blessed. So here we see that The concept of tefillin represents the total experience, the recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the world of thought, the world of the mind, and that he controls the world of action. And it's very nice having this theoretical picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's up there in the clouds, and he intervenes in history from time to time. But our responsibility is to bring that into reality, and to recognize the Zoron HaTzuyot, not just in Egypt, but every day, and in everything. Rav Hirsch, in his collected writings on the symbolism of tefillin, in volume 3, page 160 if you're interested, that's in the English, not in the German, right, the casing and the knot of the head tefillin are placed on the center of intellect and memory. The contents of the tefillin must be comprehended by the mind and guarded by the memory. From and through the mind, as implied by the straps that are allowed to hang down over the shoulders, the ideas contained in the tefillin are to penetrate deep into the heart. The ideas which the mind has identified are to be adopted by the will and thus to be translated into life and action. What is he saying? That the strap, the head, very nice, we have this idea, this concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that has to be allowed not simply to remain part of the mind, separate and divorced from the body and the Olam HaMaaseh, the world of action, but has to be allowed to impact, come forward and impact thereby on the physical actions and the way we behave. And he said that in his Pirush on the Shema, from the head the straps stream down on the right side to the seat of our earthly sensuous organs, that's why the right strap is longer than the left strap, and on the left or to the seat of our higher moral wishings, meaning that the right strap is supposed to reach the stomach and the organs of procreation, and the left strap has at least to reach the heart, we tend to make them a bit longer than that. And on the left to the seat of our higher moral wishings, accordingly to designate the whole of our physical spiritual self to be included in the dedicating bomb within our thinking head, meaning it's the total package. Tefillin represents bringing the head, if you like, the intellect, the emotions, and the actions all into one. The holistic Jewish soldier, as described in the text here, and I think made reference to by this Gemara, Soch Bein Tefillin Tefillah Aveir Hibiyodoi V'choydol Emeorcha Milchoma, that Gemara in Sota, are suggesting that it's only really possible to wage a Jewish war, which, when even in the most difficult physical circumstances, where there are all kinds of moral challenges, but where you treat the other people, there are challenges of pritzas, there are challenges of what you can eat, there are challenges of shabbat, there are challenges of every nature, every aspect of one's physical existence is being challenged. And it's very easy to drift off into a kind of moral netherland. The Torah is saying that a soldier who is incapable of remembering that the mind, the God that we know from our thoughts and our experiences, is absolutely down here, in every aspect, even in the nitty-gritty, the most mundane aspects of physical existence, he is incapable of being a Jewish soldier. And Soch Bein Tefillin LeTefillah means that you've misunderstood. You kind of, the head's one thing, and then I chat a bit, and then I put the arm on. I have divorced the mind from the emotions and the action. And when that happens, I can't be a Jewish soldier. And it could be that's what the Gemara means, interpreting the Mishnah. The Rach HaLevov, HaYorei V'Rach HaLevov, is someone, not necessarily who's simply frightened, that's Rabbi Akiva's answer, who simply can't face the Cherev Shalufa, the drawn sword, but someone who is who has not properly understood that the God of the mind, the God of the extras, the God of the world where it's easy to sit and learn and one can think about noble thoughts, is there absolutely in every aspect and is demanding, looking over your shoulder in every moment of the war. Someone who is incapable of understanding that, he should go home, because he really will bring down the war. I think I've run out of time.